Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 10th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a busy week of news. We had another Nintendo Direct showcase, this time focusing on indie games.
And a lot of really good indie games at that.
Yeah. We have a number of dates getting announced. A number of industry news bits, some new companies, some layoffs, some union news, and some other stuff. We'll get to all that. Before we do any of that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I have been playing a couple of PC games. The first one here is a game called Machina. This is a game from the same studio that did Judero, if you've heard of that. Which was sort of a, I believe that was more of a kind of claymation adventure game of sorts. I forget what exactly that game was. I did not play it, but the devs sort of made all the environments and characters and such out of real like clay and other objects and sort of scanned it into the environment. Action adventure game. Set in Scottish folk history. So, but this one, Machina, is sort of their follow-up. It is a game featuring a little robot named Machina, who is sort of in this little camp of other robots that are sort of in the business of dealing with, you know, mining and all this running shops and all this other stuff. And supporting you. And so you're kind of going around completing quests. Initially, you're kind of running through some tutorial stuff to show you how all that works. But as you start completing quests, you get better equipment. It starts unlocking more of the things that lets you kind of get around more easily. So I have these like lifts that I can warp between. You just have to make sure that they are in range of another lift. And you can sort of warp between them. And along the way, you're kind of digging through this underground environment, looking for, you know, potentially other buddies who get elaborate intro videos kind of showing off their character model. All the story seems to be fully voiced with a bunch of fun voices in here. As you mine around, you find little bits of materials that you can collect and sell once you get back to your base. The way you kind of collect them is you put them in your inventory in sort of an RE4 kind of way. So they kind of are these pieces of rock or whatever it is that you arrange in side the square that you can eventually spend your currency to open it up. So at a certain point you get experience for doing all this, and as you level up you get skill points and you can expand the bounds of that space that you can put all your stuff in. You also start unlocking more tools and such, so I have essentially dynamite, I think they call it boomy bombs, or bomby boys, I think. As well as something that called a disco ball that kind of makes you mine real fast for like 10 seconds. Can help you kind of get around, but those things can cost currency that you might want to just spend on more substantive upgrades. You have a blacksmith that makes your better tools, that lets you mine more efficiently and all that. And yeah, you're kind of just building out this area, then going back up to the overground area where all your buddies are, and that's kind of, the underground is in a 2D space, and then the overground is kind of 3D. And it's kind of has a bit more platforming to it, partially because there's, you know, some collectibles up there, and some secrets and other characters that you can meet with, but it's like the ultimate goal, at least initially, that I'm working on is finishing up quests for a bunch of characters, and then we're gonna build a path to one of the other islands that's around here. And the sea, kind of weirdly enough, looks like Mountain Dew, very bright green kind of thing. So I don't know what the nature of that's like, some nuclear material or something. They haven't really explained any of that, but otherwise, kind of just a fairly straightforward digging game that I'm looking forward to put some more time into. I've been just enjoying that a lot. And the neat thing is in the main menu, they have a little documentary for how the game was made. So you can sit there and watch and learn about all the way they make all the characters and environments and such, and scan them to turn them into models in the game, which is pretty cool. And like the main menu screen mostly just has shots of the room that they worked on these character models and such. So that's a really cool additional bonus thing in there. So yeah, that's been a lot of fun to play. Like it's available only on Steam right now for $18. The other game I've been playing is Ritual of Raven. This came from a code from Team 17. It is, to be as reductive as possible, it's sort of Stardew Valley for witches. So I would say that is definitely really reductive because it has less of a focus on the kind of open-ended nature of those games and more of a focus on story. So you're less trying to romance characters and build big farms and all that kind of stuff. Though you do some farming, you don't do any of it directly because the way they frame it, if you harvest, you know, plants by hand, it loses all the magic to it. Mm-hmm. So you use a construct and almost in a little bit of like a visual programming language to it, where you get these cards to tell the constructs what to do. So you might have, at a certain point you get these signs that are like, oh, this is a 3x3 spot of, you know, tilled land, and have it check each of the spots. And if there's no seed, plant a seed, water it, and you have a card for like a time shift thing where you just essentially, if it's going to take ultimately like 5 days to get to the flower part of the seed, you can simply have it do that and it'll fast forward 1 day. Where I'm at, I have a loop card that I can have it essentially loop and do that and kind of progressively make these seeds into the seedlings or whatever they're called, their second stage, and then to their flower form, and then get harvested. But you also have cards that can be like, well, if this is not, you know, a flower yet, then, you know, water and do the time shift thing. Otherwise, if it is in flower form, harvest it, kind of just let it loose. You can have it loop up to 10 times, and so you kind of just are able to let the setup work its way through for whatever your quest may require. That's kind of a cool aspect. Now I've got an area that is all crystals, and you can kind of do the same thing there, but you have, you know, different cards just for that, for harvesting the or extracting crystals. But you can also have it check if there's even crystal in that ground and be able to skip the time it takes for that stuff to check. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to fine-tune the way the these things work, and kind of it lets you save setups. So if you know, like, oh, this is my ideal setup for mining crystals, you know, I'll mm-hmm. it'll keep pulling this back up. Same for different kinds of plants and whatnot. And they kind of really do a good job of making that sort of an interesting thing to mess around with. And so, yeah, the story here is that you are a human from the non-magical Earth who's somehow been pulled into this world through a portal that is a magic land. You run into this mage or witch named Sage, who is sort of like, well, my familiar has disappeared through a portal until I can, you know, find a way to get back to them. I'll train you as a witch, essentially, and you can create your own character with a variety of looks and all that. And you can change it at any point. The place that you go to sleep in has a mirror that you can change that at any point. It has pronouns and different voice options. Though there's no real voice here. You'll get little, noises that you make as you're doing some talking. And so you kind of get trained by her in a lot of the basics, up to the point of you have the ability to change the moon, the phase of the moon, because some plants will change into, you'll harvest different things if they're in different phases of the moon. You'll have, you know, berries that might be different colors in different phases of the moon, all that kind of stuff. So that's a neat thing. You work with her to set that up, and then the last thing you end up doing is going through the ritual for summoning a familiar, which you get a little raven, hence the title. There's a little goober of a raven that acts like they know everything, but often is just making it up as they go along. But the familiars in this world are kind of the source of the magic for witches. And so that's why the sage being away from hers has kind of weakened her magic ability. So at the end of this, when you get your familiar, she ends up disappearing through a portal that's opened that she believes will take her to her familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of in charge of this place for the time that she's gone. And so from there, you kind of go into the town that's called Never, N-E-V-A-R, Never. I kind of meet up with the different villagers there. And you find out, like, a lot of these people have been stranded here from portals because the portals here have broken in such a way they just randomly open and people come, get sucked through and get stranded here, and you start meeting up a bunch of them. So you're trying to figure out, like, okay, wait, what happened with these portals that caused this? And you're led to find out about the portal keepers and the nature of what they were trying to do, what happened. They fail, and at a certain point, they split up. And this seems like a fairly recent thing, like it's within probably the last few months before you arrived. And so in the process, you're working with some of these villagers to start working your way to solving the problems that happened, particularly with one of the villagers whose little sister was one of the portal keepers, and you're sort of working through that. She has sort of left the village and pulled herself up somewhere else. And you kind of learn that she is, she was really ashamed of herself as a result of Sage being her mentor. And Sage kind of did not take to the failure of this whole project well. And so yelled at a lot of people, I guess, you being sort of one of the only people that doesn't have that experience from her and dealing with, you know, a lot of personal baggage of a kid who was led to believe she was going to be, you know, a great mage one day, and sort of failing and feeling the imposter syndrome and all that kind of stuff going on and all that. So it's a nice, sweet story to this. With her and her brother and all that, and where I'm at. Basically, I've gotten her back into some sort of confident form, and helped get her back up and go on. We're trying to get to the second person of the group. And so that requires me to get certain ingredients and such to be able to get over there. But while I'm in the process of that, I am kind of doing odd jobs for various other people around the village. This is where it's starting to open up more and more. Now, one of the people that popped into the out of a portal shortly after I showed up was a sloth from this planet that he's running a library now. And so I'm finding like pieces of these spell books. And so I'm collecting those and taking them to the library that gives me these like spells or whatever they are that require, you know, ingredients to do them once I get all the pieces to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice thing I've been working on. An alien comes through from some planet that, you know, is highly evolved or highly technically evolved. Everyone's like, oh no, nobody here believes in science. They all believe in this magic crap. And you kind of get them a little bit off of their high and mighty, you know, place there, and realize that that they're kind of stuck there for a while, if not maybe for good. And you kind of end up helping them set up a museum of sorts of these like lost objects that have come through these portals, which is where the fishing is. You kind of fish in these portals in a very kind of claw game kind of fashion. So you're kind of moving this like hook across the screen, and then you move it down and try to collect these items that are hanging around there. And every unique item you get, you want to take it to that little museum area and plop it down on one of the spots. And every like five items you put in there, you get a piece of furniture out of it that you can take back to your little home area, your cottage area, and you can plop it in some of the expansion areas you can build out with the currency that you get. I've already expanded once. I think I need a significant more amount of currency to get to the second expansion, but right now I've got a decent place to put some nice little furniture items. Mainly been working around. You have gifts you can give to people, but they're not for romantic reasons. They're more like a series of quests, essentially, that you can complete for these characters. And you find like this couple that are both people that were stranded here, ended up falling in love with each other. One is sort of a herbologist of sorts who sells you seeds. The other one will sell you the cards that you use for the construct programming. But they both run like their version of D&D. That's called TNT. And there's like their little quests involve kind of both like making tea and also having little parties to do some D&D stuff with them, with your Raven familiar and your character. Teaming with them to do some stuff, which is fun. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's a lot of good chill story. I've not gotten into the big overarching stuff. I imagine there will be some conflict, but as far as I've seen, there's no combat. I don't expect there to be, based on what I've seen here so far. And yeah, there's a good bit to like here. A lot of, and the story has been good enough that it's kind of keeping me going here as I've put almost 10 hours into the game so far. Now I'm basically at the point where I'm trying to complete some of these side things where it needs specific flowers or leaves or whatever it needs, and I'm trying to farm that stuff before I really start making more the mainline progress. But been enjoying that a lot, and that's on Switch and PC right now. Definitely worth checking out if you kind of like that style of game, but maybe not the open-ended nature of a lot of them. Where they're just kind of like, you go figure it out. This kind of guides you along a lot more. The nice thing is you have a book that is like your spell book of sorts, but it also keeps track of all your encyclopedia kind of stuff to it. Keeping track of all the characters, all the plants, and all the things you can collect, and will tell you, like, hey, this, under this moon phase, this will happen. These will turn into these things, that kind of stuff. So if you're very much wanting to know, like, okay, I need, you know, these blueberries, where the fuck do I get those? And it's like, oh, under this phase of the moon, this berry turns blue. It's like, oh, okay. The only real kind of thing about that is you, when you change the phase of the moon, it only happens once you go to bed. So, much like a lot of these do, you don't save until you go to bed. So you can't just kind of keep playing as much as you want. You kind of need to finish a day before you end your session. Which I kind of wish these games would move on from that, just let you save whenever. Because you can let them... You can't get... have a lot of things going on. There's no stamina system to this, so... I think at 2 a.m., you basically just instantly go to sleep. You don't get, like, a penalty, like, in Stardew Valley when you're out too late or anything like that. It's like, ah, no, you're done doing whatever. You'll wake up at 8 a.m. and kind of have to do whatever the next day. So, yeah, that's also been fun, and that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So, how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I briefly went back to Astrobot for a couple days because I remembered that, you know, since the end of last year, they had added a few new things to it, including a whole new sort of galaxy of difficult trial stages that I wanted to do because they all, of course, have new bots to collect and all that stuff. And I decided I'm going to go ahead and go back and see if I can get through them. And if you remember, like, how the button challenge stages were, where they were, like, specifically designed to piss you off, that's basically all of these stages. All of them are based around, like, a specific power-up that you'll get. So, like, you know, the frog gloves or the, you know, the thing that lets you roll up into a ball and roll around, all that stuff. And you're essentially trying to get from point A to point B. And in between is a bunch of really challenging obstacles that really do require some serious timing and coordination. Otherwise, you will just keep dying over and over again. The good news is, unlike the time trials, you do not have to, like, you're not running against the clock here. It does, like, keep track of what your speed is, but, like, you're not held back from getting a bot or whatever at the end of the stage. As long as you finish the stage, you get the bot. And then after you do all of the challenge stages, there's a final hidden challenge stage that shows up that basically throws a bunch of those power-ups, not all of them, thank goodness, but a lot of them into one single stage. And once again, there is no checkpoint, so if you end up dying towards the end, sorry, you got to go all the way back to the beginning and try again. It took me a couple dozen tries before I finally finished it, but yeah, just remembering how good that game is and why it was Game of the Year in 2004. It was just that damn good. But the other game I've been playing and I've been making some significant progress on is Void Stranger. And I finished my first run through the Void earlier this week. And what happens after that is you're essentially told that, you know, there's something you got to do, and then you're sent back to the beginning to start all over again. And so essentially that when a game does that, it's like, okay, I need to, like, be paying attention to, like, all these surroundings and stuff around me. And one of the things I figured out is every time you go into, like, a new series of floors after you awaken from, like, the save rooms, there are these like murals that are, like, generally at the top of the room, and they'll have these sort of, like, pictograms on them. And these pictograms are called brands. And Essentially, once you're going back through the series of these floors, you will eventually come across a room that is like a perfect square. And essentially what you have to do is you have to rearrange all the tiles on that room to match the brand. And when that happens, you'll get these, we'll just call it for lack of a better term, a pattern show up on either side of the screen and then fall off into the pit, basically. Where you'll end up in a secret floor where a lot of times you'll end up getting an item that you'll be able to use from then on called Burdens. And the ones I've gotten so far are a thing called the Void Memory, which is basically a thing that lets you speak to like the statues and the boulders that you see all over the place. And they'll, like, tell you stuff. They'll give you hints, or they'll talk about lore, stuff like that. Another one is a pair of what's called Void Wings, which are these pair of, like, fairy wings that will actually let you, like, skip over a pit. You know, as long as it's, like, you know, one tile long. If it's any longer than that, then, you know, it'll, you know, you'll fall. But this is a huge game changer because it means you can basically move around a lot easier, not constantly having to refill like all of the pits you come across. You can actually just skip over some of them. And then the last one I got is the Void Sword, which is exactly what it sounds like. You can actually now kill enemies with this thing, which most of the time is fine. Not all the time, because some of the time you're going to need something to stand on a switch to open doors. But yeah, that's where I am. I'm just about finished with my third run. Because I finished a whole run a couple days ago, and I'm finishing up my third run probably tonight. And yeah, I'm just amazed at like the layers that this game has and how it sort of just slowly, you know, unveils its story to the player in ways that are not, you know, it's very kind of From Software-esque in that there is a story, but you have to like actively go out to look for it. And it just kind of peels it back slowly. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Rib, what about you?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on the show. I was at San Diego Comic-Con a couple weeks ago, and then I was at Evo last week. So a bunch of content is up on the site there for stuff that I did play. And I also brought my PS5 to Evo just because like I was really enjoying the game. That game was Ninja Gaiden Ragebound. Phil has a review on the site, and I'm really loving that one. I don't have as many hours as I want to put into it, but like I'm just really, really having fun with it. It's published by Dotemu, you know, that's pretty much their thing. And yeah, like this game is difficult, but it's also really fair with it, and I'm really enjoying the pacing. I've played through the first three levels and have just had a lot of fun. And basically they're all self-contained levels. It's not a Metroidvania. I'm loving traversal. You know, you can jump, you can go ahead and parry things with your sword. And a lot of the hits that you put on enemies are pretty much one hitters if they're like easy to fight. And then there's some that are a little bit more difficult. The bosses are pretty rough, but at the same time, a lot of the save points happen right before the boss. So even if you get killed, which will happen, you pretty much appear, you know, just a few frames before it. And that's been pretty awesome. So yeah, I'm really enjoying Ninja Gaiden Ragebound. It's pretty much the year of the ninja. We have that. We have Shinobi coming up at the end of the month. We have Ninja Gaiden 4 as well coming. And I'm really enjoying all that, especially since I have a lot of ninja games on my Fantasy Critic. Speaking of fantasy, I'm playing Madden NFL 26. This game is not out yet, but the embargo lifted last Monday, so I can go ahead and talk about it. And yeah, like if you're someone that also plays college football and you enjoyed the gameplay changes they made to it, pretty much the same stuff happened to Madden 26. And I thought College Football 26 was my favorite football game like up until now. And I think Madden might dethrone it, just because like I've always been more of an NFL guy, and a lot of those changes did make its way there. I'm currently playing through a little bit of franchise mode. I'm not that deep into it, but I am liking a lot of the changes that we see. Franchise mode now is a full-on RPG. So you can go ahead and, you know, hire and fire offensive defensive coordinators. You can decide to use the coach that's currently on the team, or you can just make a new one. And you can decide whether you want to be an offensive guru, you know, a defensive genius, or whatever it may be. And you can go ahead and build there based on a lot of the stuff that you have. And you're going to have a whole bunch of archetypes that are only going to be available after you've surpassed a certain level. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying a lot of the sim nature of Madden. There are a few issues. The biggest one that I've come across so far is that with the halftime show is being led by Scott Hansen, and it's actually fantastic in franchise mode because you're actually seeing scores and highlights from other games. That's never happened before. Like, normally you just have the scores and a lot of the stats would be listed incorrectly, but now it's like, okay, I can go ahead and see this game between Denver and Tennessee happening, and I can see a touchdown pass thrown by Cam Ward, you know, quarterback of the Titans. And, you know, it's not a game that I have absolute control in because I'm using the Packers, so it's cool to see those highlights. The problem is, after all those highlights, the game freezes. And you can tell that because you can't press the home button on any controller, so you have to actually just reset the whole thing, and that's pretty annoying. Obviously you don't want to go through that, and because of that I don't want to risk seeing the halftime show again. That being said, it sucks because, like I said, it's a really, really good one. You also have the option of what commentators you want on the game. They currently have the same three from last year. You know, they have Brandon Gunn, Charles Davis, Brock Heward, and I forget the woman's name, but she does a really good job there. And then you have Mike Tirico and Greg Olsen, all of them solid. Main thing, though, is that, you know, a lot of this stuff is recycled from last year. And, you know, Brandon Godden and Charles Davis have been doing this for years now, and I want to hear someone else. And that's pretty much always been my thing with Madden. But, yeah, the presentation has also been changed up a little bit. The primetime games, as opposed to the regular games, have different graphics in the bottom. So, like, when you're playing a regular game, you have the score in the bottom stretched out with the entire screen. But if you're playing Thursday or Sunday Night Football, it's kind of condensed in the middle, and it's all really, really clean. So, like, if you're somebody who really enjoys watching football on all the different networks, you're seeing all of that really represented. At the same time, you know, you aren't getting Fox, you aren't getting Amazon, CBS, ESPN, but at the same time, EA Sports has done a solid job of, like, really mixing that up to really give it its feel. There's also celebrations specific to the teams that you use. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, so the big celebration for Packers touchdowns would be the Lambeau Leap. So, you know, you go ahead and press up on the right stick, and all of a sudden your player can go ahead and jump into the Lambeau Leap. All of those are pretty cool, and I'm definitely enjoying that as well. I'm also really enjoying the new skills trainer. Madden did have a whole bunch of different kinds of changes. The one that I don't like that seems to be sort of a permanent fixture now is the kicking game. It's been the same the last couple of years, but I've always wanted to use the older one. And, like, now you really have to, you know, choose the power and accuracy to your kicks. And if you're used to the old way, you know, your trigger happy thumbs are just going to do it wrong and all of a sudden end up with a penalty that way. They've also added the penalty for making sure that you're kicking off into the target zone, because if you don't, the other team gets the ball at the 40-yard line, which will put you at a rather big disadvantage, because defenses, from what I'm playing, it's hard to play so far. Part of that is because they've adapted what college football did, where if you want to intercept the football, to pick it off, you have to actually see the ball. So that's fun on the offensive side because it allows you to take more chances. But if you're playing defense and you're used to picking it off, it's not going to be as easy. So there's that. But yeah, Madden's definitely pretty solid so far. I've actually joined an online franchise with a whole bunch of other journalists and content creators. So we're going to start doing that at the end of the month, and we'll go from there. It'll be a while, maybe at least a week or maybe 2 weeks before I post this review on this one. But really enjoying it so far. It's quite solid. I'm also playing Wheel World. This game is one that I've had for a few weeks. I just haven't had much time to, you know, really dive in to play it. This game is basically an open world, you know, fixer upper bike game. You pretty much use this character who finds a bike and has to help this bike spirit find these legendary parts. And, you know, I'm not a bike guy, so I'm not going to be able to name all those parts. But, you know, you want to find wheels, you want to find the bike frame, you want to find the seat. And every time you find a new item, you can upgrade your bike. But the cool thing about this game is it sort of has that Burnout Paradise feel where you just go around and, enjoy the landscape, go on races against other posses, if you will. And the main thing you want to get here is like street cred. That way you can go ahead and gain access to various other places that you can go ahead and bike at. And yeah, it's really solid. The controls feel nice. The main thing that I'm not liking is that there is a lot of draw space. You know, when you're able to zoom in, all of a sudden things appear. I'm not big on visuals, but that is something that really annoys me, especially when you're playing on PS5 and things like that. But it also is an Annapurna published game, so you know it's obviously an indie. But I'm enjoying it so far. The open world here is better than Mario Kart's, which isn't saying a whole lot. But considering people talked about Mario Kart's open world being a game changer, Wheel World does a whole lot better. I'm not saying it's Mario Kart fun, but it's definitely pretty fun in its own regard. And then also, I'm still playing Donkey Kong Bonanza. Really enjoying that game. This might be my game of the year so far. Just being able to do all these new challenges. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but after you beat the game, there's more to do. Harder levels, different kinds of abilities that or different kinds of obstacles that require you to use abilities that you didn't know you had. Things like that, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it. But I haven't been playing it as much. I'm sort of starting to teeter back on that one. So I'm looking forward to the new stuff that's coming out on Switch 2. I actually just downloaded the demos for Mina the Hollower as well as The Adventures of Elliot. I haven't played either yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to diving into those demos, especially since it's going to be a while until we get either of those. But yeah, that's about it.
All right.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, we've got some new additions to Game Pass. Let me see here. Yeah, available now. There's Rainworld for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard.
Yep.
That's one of those really neat looking games. Hard to describe what the gameplay is like on that.
It is very artsy. You're playing like a small little prey animal who's like basically navigating through this enormous like post-apocalyptic world where tech and nanomachines have basically taken everything over. So you're basically just nothing but dead machinery everywhere. And you're basically climbing around and you're trying to avoid predators.
Yeah.
That's the game, basically. And it's really damn good.
Yeah, so there's that. Let's see. Also available now. They got a few additions to Game Pass Standard here. There's Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Vector for Xbox. So you can check that one out. Lonely Mountain Snow Riders. Also for Xbox, MechWarrior 5 Clans and Orcs Must Die Death Trap that have all been added to Game Pass Standard. Let's see, for August 7th, that just was a few days ago, Assassin's Creed Mirage for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. So if you've not checked that one out, that's a solid game.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got two that have not come out yet. For Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, Aliens Fireteam Elite. Mm-hmm. This is returning. This is the co-op third-person survival shooter. I guess going up alongside Alien Earth that is starting to air for FX and Hulu. There's that. Then on the 14th, which will be Thursday, Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass, Nine Kings will be going into early access.
Mm-hmm.
They call this a fast-paced roguelike kingdom builder. I'm not sure if this is in the vein of the kingdom games. No, this is more kind of a traditional RTS kind of thing, grid-based RTS.
Mm-hmm.
So Okay, you're kind of building up essentially like a big base inside of a kingdom,
yep.
And taking on enemies as they come along,
mm-hmm.
In big battle kind of stuff. Okay.
Yep.
There's that. That'll be on just PC, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And that seems to be it. Yeah. Seems like an all right list.
Yeah.
Of stuff here.
Especially Citizen Sleeper 2. If the original game is great, the sequel is even better.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah. Let's see. We got some dates here, or we got one here that's available now. Mm. During QuakeCon, we knew that Night Dive was going to have something new coming out. And they announced it. It's Heretic plus Hexen.
Yep.
Which was this sort of duo of games that are, you know, in the vein of like the Doom stuff, but instead of having guns,
yeah,
you're gonna have more magic staffs. That
it was made by Raven.
Yeah,
made by Raven Studios before they became the what they are now. And yeah, they basically had John Romero help produce it and produce them. And yeah, they're both like really good quality fantasy FPS games.
Yeah. So yeah, those are out on pretty much everything, I believe. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC for $14.99. They're also on Game Pass. Yeah, it looks like it includes some of the Heretic, Shadow of the Serpent Riders, Hexen, Beyond Heretic, Hexen, Death Kings of the Dark Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
Two new episodes. Heretic Faith Renewed, Hexen Vestiges of Grandeur. Yeah. So some extra mod type stuff there, along with a bunch of quality of life features as well added to the game. So that's neat. You want to check those out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to play like a bit of old PC gaming history, Heretic and Hexen are both like primo examples of mid-90s gaming.
Yeah. So there's that. Let's see. We got a demo coming out this week for Hell Is Us.
Yeah.
The action game, action RPG that's coming out later this year. Yeah, this will be a PS5, Xbox demo. So
yep.
If you're on consoles, you can check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
The game itself will be out September 4th, so not too far away.
Yep. This is one I've been keeping my eye on, so I'm definitely going to be downloading this Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, there. You got that to look forward to this week. Also happening later this week, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tactical Takedown will be coming to Xbox Series X and S and Switch on August 14th. So people can check those out. I've played a bunch of the PC version, and it is a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like they will be coming out alongside an update that adds remix mode,
mm-hmm.
Which adds save more content, more enemies, and increased difficulty. So yeah, that looks like it'll add some more stuff to do, so that's cool. This is a very good strategy game. Definitely worth checking out if you like your TMNT or your strategy games.
Mm-hmm.
This does some really neat stuff with that, so that's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Prior to this announcement, it's only on PC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not on PS5 as of right now.
No.
That's interesting. Cool.
Yeah, from what I've seen, Zlavier, the head of Strange Scaffold, was basically saying they don't have plans for PS5, so maybe that'll change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but so far that's just what they're working on. So
yep.
Okay. I've only played the demo, so I don't know what's up with this game yet.
Yeah. Speaking of demos, this one's been featured on demos and showcases a number of times. Demon's Skull finally has a new launch date, September 3rd. In a couple of weeks here, people will be able to check it out. A game that kind of apes some of the style, especially battle style, of games like the original Persona games. Which, if you do not know the series from Persona 3 onward, had a much different battle system than the one that preceded it. It was more of a grid-based kind of tactical strategy kind of battle system.
Yep.
Which had its neat bonuses to it, but also, you know, if you've played like the PSP versions of those games, it could definitely feel a very old school approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have characters die, they're just kind of stuck behind XP wise for the rest of the game. No real easy way to get them caught up again.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I assume, is a bit more modern in its take on that stuff, but it is a very cool looking game, so I'm looking forward to seeing more of this in the near future. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I played Demon's Skull a couple years ago at PAX West, and I don't know, it just wasn't for me. I don't know if it's been polished a little better. But yeah, this one's coming out soon. I'm looking forward to seeing if it's changed, but it's not a day one for me as of right now.
It looks interesting to me, but I want to see what other people think first.
Yeah, so yeah, there's that. We got another game coming out in September, Formula Legends. That'll be out September 18th. This is a racing game. I think it's supposed to be a little more simulation, but I think it's still supposed to be mostly an arcade racing game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the sort of history of racing competitions, featuring a number of vehicles in the vein of like the way that, you know, Formula One has looked over the years. And some of those kind of vehicles.
Yeah, especially like the historical ones, because like what like old Formula One cars when auto racing first started to be a thing, to what we call Formula One now, look very different from each other. Like, you're at, you know, when you think Formula One, it's like, oh, the cars with, like, the, there's, like, the wingspan in the front, and there's, like, the spoiler on the back and everything. That's not what they used to look like.
Yeah.
They used to look a lot more primitive than that.
Yeah. So, yeah, this game has a lot of interesting vibes to it. There's demos out now for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. I guess it's supposed to have a Switch demo coming out on the 14th here.
Mm-hmm.
Later this week. But yeah, this one I've seen some footage of, and it looked pretty neat, and I've downloaded the demo, just have not had a chance to start it up yet. But it looks really neat for the racing genre that does not have a ton of variety to it at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. Then we have one more here for September, Lego Party.
Yep.
The very Mario Party-esque kind of game, but featuring a bunch of Lego characters and such. It's going to be on everything. It'll be out September 30th. So yeah, that is a game that I've heard good things about, as far as the Mario Party stuff. But probably not going to be one that adds a lot of unique things to it. But yeah, that'll be out just before the holidays.
Yeah, this was a game I played during SGF, and I had a whole lot of fun with it. It is unapologetically Mario Party. The map that we played on was based on Lego Pirates, and you know, every few turns, some crazy things would happen on the map, and the map was pretty much also Mario Party, to where, you know, you land on it, you gain a number of coins or whatever it may be. And yeah, it's pretty awesome. The main difference is that the minigames take place at the beginning of the turn versus the end of the turn. But aside from that, it is pretty much the same. Another thing that I really like is during the last turn, as well as the last five turns, the board sort of changes. But in the last turn, they actually change things up so that no space is useless. Because in Mario Party, if you land on like the bank space or the store space at on the last turn, you know, nothing happens because you can't buy anything to use the next turn. Whereas with Lego Party, it makes like every turn do something, and bullshit does happen. That's exactly what happened to me when I played, and yeah, it was funny because we were playing with a actual gold brick on the line. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. The best thing about it is that it's also not a full price game. I believe it's going to be $40 when it comes out. So it's a pretty solid budget title to get before the holidays.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That'll be a neat looking game. Mm. And that's it for the dates that I have here for this year. We got one more here that Genshin Impact for the PS4 is going to be shutting down on April 8th, 2026. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned here, it is due to limitations related to hardware performance and platform application size, which is not really a huge surprise because that original release on the PS4 just did not run very well. It wasn't until I got to the PS5 I was like, oh yeah, this is how it should run.
Yep.
So yeah, not really too surprising here. Yeah, their timeline for this on September 10th, they're going to remove Genshin Impact from the PlayStation Store.
Mm-hmm.
February 25th of next year, they're going to end all in-game purchases for PS4 only players, and then end of all update support for Genshin Impact for PS4. So we'll stop functioning there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's unfortunate, but makes a lot of sense for the way that game is on a bunch more capable systems. So if you have a PS5, PC, Xbox, any of that, you should probably check it out there. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah.
No, nothing. I was just saying, like, yeah, I originally played Genshin on PS4 and yeah, I've played a little bit of it on PS5, and it's like night and day.
Yeah.
It just does not run well on a PS4. Like, really, it does not.
Yeah. Very much was not really capable of running that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's gotten worse as they've continued to evolve it. But yeah, let's get to another story here. Mortal Kombat Trilogy has been confirmed to be a part of the upcoming Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection, which is nice to see. That was the version of the game released in 1996. That was the final version of Mortal Kombat 3 that basically added every character and stage from the previous games up to that point. And this introduced brutalities, a combo-focused alternative to fatalities.
Yep.
That has only come back in the more recent games.
Yeah,
and short-lived aggressor bar,
yep,
which grants fighters increased speed and damage when filled. And I believe it was also kind of I forget if this is the one that's kind of broken or not. Might be depending on the platform it was on.
Yeah, it depends on like what you're playing it on.
Yeah, because I think that game was kind of too big for like the
tech at the time.
The consoles to be able to handle the ports.
Yeah, they had to cut a lot of the character animations like in half in order to like fit a lot of them. And it's pretty noticeable if you play like, you know, say like you're playing Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 and then playing this next to it, you can definitely see like where there's a definite downgrade in parts. But the flip side of that is that the reason this particular game is so heavily cherished is because it's the one that ended up becoming a big deal on the fighting game scene. So it's, you know, on competitive fight esports. So yeah, people have been looking forward to this one. Yeah. To finding out that this one is here. And honestly, just all the other stuff that's going to be on this thing.
Yeah. From what it's saying here, Bang Sung was kind of the broken character for the PS1 version.
Yep.
Because it's had extra loading delays to switch to characters. So there are options to completely turn off morphs or let the system load two additional characters into memory when playing Shang Tsung, thus eliminating the long loading delays when morphing.
Mm-hmm.
The only time the CPU ever controls him is during the attract mode. So he doesn't show up in any of like the tower stuff or anything like that. And yeah, the N64 version has 3-on-3 simultaneous battles as an exclusive feature. Yeah, so that kind of has some better things, but the music is pretty bad, it seems like. And there's only 30 characters included instead of the 37 featured in the PS1 version.
Yep.
It lacks Goro and Kintaro, the classic versions of Jax, Kung Lao, Kano, and Raiden, as well as the unmasked Sub-Zero. Though the masked Sub-Zero can perform both of their special moves.
Yep.
Chameleon is replaced with Chameleon. That's C Chameleon is replaced with K Chameleon. A female ninja that randomly switches between Katana, Melina, and Jade.
Yep.
And yeah, there's an ultimate combat code screen after the single player game is over. A 6-digit code can be entered to unlock Human Smoke and Chameleon for normal play.
Yep, that's a holdover from MK3.
Yeah. And then there's the Saturn version that has its own issues. So yeah, that's an interesting like game that seems like it was far more intensive than any of the other games really were for those consoles. So that'll be interesting to have. I assume it's just going to be the arcade version.
Yeah.
But they really should put those other versions, just be like, hey, here you go. These are broken, but enjoy. So yeah, that's going to be a very cool collection. They announced physical versions as well. There's a standard edition for, let's see, $60 for Switch 2, $50 for every other platform. Deluxe edition, $80 on Switch 2, $70 on PS5 and Switch. Has a steelbook case, magnet poster, lenticular card, arcade flyers, mini marquees and arcade cabinet cards. And the collector's edition that includes a Goro controller holder statue, commemorative arcade token, hardcover art and lore book, a Scorpion/Sub-Zero pin set. That's on every version.
Yep.
No shipping date for that, but the other physical editions will ship on December 12th. Though I don't think they have a date for the game itself yet. I assume it'll at least be before December 12th. So there you go. That's going to be one of the more exciting retro things coming out the rest of this year. So there you go.
Yep.
Let's see. Get some developer news. We had a new studio formed, Red Octane Games. Sort of a new version of the old Red Octane, which was one of the two companies that made the original Guitar Hero games, with Harmonix, and once they finished Guitar Hero 2, and I think the 80s game, they ended up splitting up with Harmonix making Rock Band, and Red Octane sticking to work on the other Guitar Hero games until Activision Blizzard shut them down in like 2010.
Yep.
Something like that. I think Neversoft and some other studios ended up working on the future Guitar Hero games. So this is a new rhythm studio. It's under the Embracer free mode branch of Embracer, with a bunch of veteran rhythm game developers working here. Yeah, they're currently working on their debut rhythm game that's going to be announced later this year. That might be something that shows up on the Game Awards or something like that. So yeah, the studio is led by Simon Ebacher, former production director on a bunch of the Guitar Hero games at Neversoft. Yeah, they include a bunch of creators and developers who worked on Guitar Hero and DJ Hero games. So. Yeah, that seems neat. Though being under Embracer is a little bit of a bummer, because we know if they don't do well, then Embracer will shut them down. So
mm-hmm.
better get it right, whatever they're working on.
Yep.
So yeah, it seems like this will be hardware based. Based on the trailer they put out.
Mm-hmm.
It literally has a section here that says a new era in rhythm gaming hardware. So mm-hmm. I imagine some maybe guitar controller or something. I don't know.
Mm.
We'll see. But yeah, there you go. Let's get to some bad news. Some more bad news from Microsoft.
Yep.
As they announced that the game by Avalanche Studios, Contraband, that got announced like 4 years ago. We've literally never heard anything since then.
Nope.
Has been canceled. Mm-hmm. Not really a huge surprise.
Nope.
For any of that, because you don't hear about a game, any new footage or screenshots or really the developers saying anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably assume that things have gone poorly and it's not going to end up releasing.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being the case here. Unfortunately, kind of wasting the time of a talented studio like Avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably won't ever work on any more Just Cause games.
Mm-hmm.
I would like them to work on something cool. Kind of show that they still have it, because they were definitely top of their game like 10 to 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't really made much of note since then, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they can survive this and make some cool stuff and not have Xbox essentially be the reason they get shut down. So,
yeah.
Hopefully get some better news from them at some point in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it sucks. But that's... It's just one of the symptoms of sort of the contraction of this AAA gaming space, or at least that part of the industry.
And Microsoft just signing a bunch of deals for games, whether they were going to actually follow through with them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that one ended up being one of the ones that didn't follow through, like Everwild and Perfect Dark and a bunch of those games.
Mm-hmm.
That also got shut down, so yeah. There you go.
Mm.
But we'll go to some more positive news. Sony announced some figures for the PS5 that has reached 80.3 million units shipped.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big number for a system that supposedly has not done well.
I think
it's only like 2 million, like 2 or 3 million behind the PS4 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Considering what the PS5 launched in during a pandemic and some of the worst shortage of parts we've seen for the gaming industry in a long time. Kind of an incredible feat that they've reached at this point. It seems like they are doing just as well as they've ever done on the money front. I believe at this point, the PS4's life cycle, like they were doing, they had like $200 units and $300 PS4 units. And as we know, the PS5 right now is like $450, $500 for the main systems and $700 for the Pro. So, they're making plenty of money, selling very well. So,
yep,
that seems to be good for them.
Yeah, it's solid, especially since, we're seeing companies like Nintendo, raise their prices on old hardware. And, doing that. And obviously Sony has done the same thing overseas. But at the same time, going back to the pandemic and its launch, PS5s were so hard to get for longer than any platform that I believe. I remember, like, I think I've bought like 10 in my life just trying to help other people. But anyway, like, especially now with, for some reason, people are already talking about the PS6. Like, it's funny seeing that people are just, getting on their PS5s, and we're seeing, talked about Genshin Impact shutting down their PS4 stuff. Like, I don't know how much people are still playing on PS4. I would imagine that it's still a popular platform. But yeah, mm-hmm. like it's time to get on, and it looks like Sony is finally seeing some success there with the right way to do it.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, there you go for that.
Yep.
Now we'll go back to some bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Bethel Games has announced that they have laid off 11 of their full-time employees,
mm-hmm.
Which Mike Bethel has said here is constitutes the majority of our full-time staff. I don't know necessarily what their part-time staff might be or anything like that, but yeah, they posted a statement saying, sad news today, Bethel Games, having been unable to secure a new larger scale project, is reducing in size. It means that 11 jobs are being made redundant. Mm-hmm. This constitutes the majority of our full-time staff. It became clear leading up to the release of our most recent game that we were not immune to the challenges faced by many game development teams seeking funding partners in 2024 and 2025. We've unfortunately been able to communicate these challenges ahead of time. And work with affected staff. These departures as much as possible via severance packages. So yeah, basically saying like they've suffered from the continued trouble of finding new partners to fund projects,
mm-hmm.
That many independent studios have been dealing with. So they're kind of having to lay off a bunch of their people, most of their full-time staff to try to keep the company going.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they can survive that, but yeah, just continue to see even a studio like this is just kind of kept going with its titles.
Yeah,
making a lot of small games every couple of years. Mm. Are also having troubles much like everybody else. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not really having any like huge sellers has finally kind of been the big issue for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think all their games sell pretty well, but not like anything that sets them up to be funded for whatever the next project is. So they've had to sort of try to find partners to help fund the next things they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And that unfortunately has stopped happening. So yeah, hopefully wish the team the best and those that are leaving. Mm. Hope they can find new jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But that is also increasingly hard, just as finding funding. So, yeah.
Mm.
Not a great time.
Mm. Yeah, it just goes to show how difficult it is in the industry right now. You know, obviously we're talking about layoff after layoff, and here's another one. But at the same time, it's like people are saying, oh yeah, we gotta go indie. That doesn't mean anything. If you can't find funding, you can't find funding. And that's exactly what happened here, and it's tough to see, especially like a week, 2 weeks after we find out, John Wick Hex has been delisted. Doing that, closes down another source of revenue you guys could have made, and it's tough. I don't mm-hmm. know how big their team is overall, but him saying that the majority is now gone, that's rough. But at least there are some measures being taken to make it a little bit easier, and we definitely need that.
Mm.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. Then we'll get to our next story here. Rod Ferguson is leaving Blizzard mm-hmm. after being there for 5 years.
Yeah. He's a
guy that has done a lot of big games for mostly Microsoft properties.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, his big stuff has been working at Epic Games on the Gears franchise, then continue to work on the Gears franchise at the Coalition. And then worked at Blizzard, helping them get to working on Diablo 4 and all that. I know he's jumped around a bit here and there between those. He joined Irrational Games in 2012 to help them get Bioshock Infinite finished. So yeah, who knows what his next project is, but certainly got a heck of a legacy in games, so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up next.
Mm.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not much of a Blizzard fan, so this doesn't really like hit home for me. But I do know there are a lot of people who know this guy is like. Hopefully, whatever is next is awesome. But yeah, it's just another hit for
Mm-hmm.
Activision, Microsoft, Blizzard, whoever. You hope it can continue to use its creativity for good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, more Blizzard news. The Raven QA Union has finally secured a contract with Microsoft after 3 years of bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great feat, considering that's a hell of a long time to be bargaining a new contract for this, and I'm sure Microsoft did not make it easy on them. But yeah, that's great to see. They formed in January 2022 with assistance from the Communications Workers of America, and yeah, have finally gotten a deal 3.5 years later, so... That's great to see for them. Hopefully they will be able to keep those jobs for the foreseeable future, but knowing Microsoft, that'll always be a threat that looms over the company. So yeah, there you go.
Mm.
There's some good news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, last story here, also a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Digital Foundry has gone independent.
Oh, thank goodness.
Bought back its outstanding shares from their parent company, Ziff Davis.
Yeah.
I do find it always interesting when people talk about the Ziff Davis company, because essentially they have formed a company called IGN Entertainment that owns all the gaming properties that they own. So whenever this stuff gets reported, just reported as IGN, and it's like, no, IGN didn't really have any say in all this stuff. It's always Ziff Davis is pulling the strings
mm-hmm.
on this stuff, continuing laying off people at IGN, despite them doing better than ever. So Digital Foundry has managed to buy their way out and are going to be going independent and focused on their Patreon for people to support that
mm-hmm.
If you want to keep them going. So, yeah. That's good news for them and their fans. So
mm-hmm.
always good to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Digital Foundry does not do what everyone else does. So, you know, that automatically makes them special. When they were acquired by, you know, ZD and IGN, I was like, this is weird. It's just weird condensing of the industry. But yeah, at the same time, I want to go ahead and credit those organizations for letting this buyout actually happen, because it's better for them, it's better for the fans, it's better for the staff. So, I'm hopeful that they have enough Patreons, but I'm pretty sure they will.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you go. But yeah, we got the last part here, the Nintendo Indie World Showcase of games. And we'll kind of move through this pretty quickly. Let's see, we have Mina the Hollower open it up.
Yep.
Nothing really new here other than there's a demo out now on the Switch and Switch 2.
And if you have not played that demo yet, you really should. Because that game, if they can keep that energy up through the entire game, it's going to end up being Game of the Year material for sure.
Yeah. And that demo, demo's out now. The game will be out October 31st.
Yep.
That we already know that. Let's see, then we got Well Dweller that got announced. This is from Top Hat Studios. The same developers of Crypt Custodian mm-hmm. and Islets, Hal Thompson.
Yep.
It's what they call a dark fairy tale Metroidvania.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out on Switch and PC next year. So that's one to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Then they shut off Neverway for the like fifth showcase it's been in since Summer Game Fest.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did not know that was a game, that is, it's Switch and PC right now. It'll be out sometime next year. Let's see, Herdling. It's coming out August 21st on a PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that's one that's looking pretty cool. And we got Is This Seat Taken, a little social puzzle game about arranging people on a variety of places where you would have seats to find the perfect places where these different personalities should be sitting and, finding the optimal setup there.
Mm-hmm.
That's out now. $10 on Switch, PC, and mobile. So that one's worth checking out. Let's see. Little Kitty Big City has a new update called the Picture Perfect update, coming out August 27th. That I believe adds a new customization tool for your kitty to change their look and all that. There are new parts of the neighborhood to explore, new characters, and some new mischief to get into. That'll be out August 27th on any of the editions that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we got Content Warning.
Yep.
That was a big PC game that came out either late last year or earlier this year. But one of those kind of co-op games where you're essentially a content team making YouTube videos, essentially, to where you go underground and deal with these monsters and such that are down there. And you try and survive that as you're making these videos, and once you get back up, you can submit those videos to your YouTube and kind of watch the end product and see how many hits you get and all that, and make some money and try to keep the numbers going up to stay alive. So, one of those kind of surprise hit games that is finally coming to consoles, PS5, Xbox, and the Switch and Switch 2.
Yeah.
Sometime next year.
All right.
Then we got Ball Pits. This was the main Devolver Digital game that they showed off at Summer Game Fest in their showcase. Mm-hmm. It is a weird mix of like Arkanoid, Vampire Survivors, and like base building stuff, roguelite stuff to it. This is coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC October 15th. And Switch 2 will be sometime later in the fall. It'll also be on Game Pass, I guess. This is the developer of Mr. Sun's Hatbox and sort of his next game. This is a very different game. So, then we had Ultimate Sheep Raccoon get shown off for Switch, Switch 2, and PC. It'll be out sometime this winter. This is a follow-up to I forget what their previous game was called, but it was like a platform, competitive platforming game where you're kind of building obstacles and platforms and such to get across this level.
Yep.
But here it's more of a racing game. Mm-hmm. Maybe their version of like Trials, where you can put up obstacles and such to either hinder your opponents or help them, whatever. It works the same way. You basically want to at least ensure that one person will not make it to the end. Otherwise, nobody gets points if everybody's safe. But if somebody dies, then everybody gets points that survives. So it's one of those competitive games. Then we got to see Glaciered, which is a game set on a planet's Earth 65 million years in the future, where the Everwinter transforms the planet's surface into a gigantic sheet of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And so life has continued to survive under the ice in the seas below. So you're controlling this like avian creature that is going around and fighting other creatures and such. There's a bit of RPG elements to this kind of thing. It's coming to Switch 2 and PC, and it's a timed console exclusive on the Switch 2. Mm-hmm. It'll be out sometime this holiday. There's that. We got to see Winter Burrow. That's coming to Xbox, Switch, and PC sometime this winter. Undusted Letters from the Past, which is a neat little game about basically cleaning up these kind of dirty objects, and that adds to the story that's going on here. You learn the backstories behind these objects in every chapter. The main character's mother has passed, so you're going through like their effects and seeing like what stuff they had and learn more about your mother and all that kind of stuff. So looks neat. That'll be out Switch and PC this October. Then we got Tiny Bookshop, where you kind of create a little bookshop that hangs out, I think, at the beach. So it seems like it's a trailer, so you might take it to different locations to sell books to people as like a cozy management kind of game. That's out now for $20 on Switch and PC. Then they announced that Caves of Cud is coming to Switch this winter, which is one of those classic roguelites kind of games, or roguelike kind of games that has been around for a while. Came out formerly on Steam a couple years ago. So yeah, it's going to be coming to Switch at some point later this year. I don't know how it's going to work so much, but could be neat. Let's see, Strange Antiquities, I believe, is the sequel to Strange Horticulture, which is a fairly popular game. That's coming to Switch and PC on September 17th. So there's that. So then Opus Prism Peak is coming to Switch, Switch 2, and PC this fall. It's another one of those like adventure games, multi, like story branching, multi ending story adventure games. So,
yep,
there's that. There's a game called Go-Go Town coming to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, spring of 2026. That's sort of like a town building simulation game. So there's that. And then they ended on the announcement that UFOs 50 is out now on the Switch. So that's one you can go check out. That was my number two game last year.
Yeah.
Well worth checking out. It is
definitely
an incredible collection of games made to mimic an era of the, like the 80s. The kind of games you would see there, games influenced by that stuff. That is just a huge variety of games. It's 50 games. And if you play them in like the order of release, you kind of notice how they evolve their ideas and sequels and future games and all that kind of stuff. That is just a really well-made collection. So,
oh yeah.
That's one to check out. And yeah, that was the showcase. I would say for me, this was not really a great showcase because I know about most of these games beforehand. Luckily, some of them got dates, but a lot of them are still like, as coming out later.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. Who knows? There's a lot of winters, a lot of falls.
Yeah.
A lot of 2026s. And it's like, this didn't really seem to change a lot, as well as it's still highlighting the lack of dev kits, because a lot of these are just for the Switch and not the Switch 2. And it's like, all right, I don't know why you think Derek Yude is not deserving of a Switch 2 dev kit. Considering the success of Spelunky and all that, and this game's reputation, but you know, Nintendo doesn't have a ton of those to send out, and probably less so for indie devs, as we've seen not many indies on the Switch 2 yet. So yeah, but yeah. What year did you enjoy seeing, Brandon?
Well, obviously, Mina the Hollower is the really big one. That is their Yacht Club coming out, finally making their follow up to the huge, unprecedented success that Shovel Knight was. Going in basically a completely different direction, and if the demo is any indication, they've basically nailed it. So yeah, I am absolutely excited to play that. Neverway, that is another game that ever since I laid eyes on it, I'm like, yeah, this is right up my alley. I got to play this. It's got all the farm sim stuff with the slice of life stuff. And oh yeah, there's a bunch of cosmic horror shit happening too. I'm like, yep, that's exactly the type of game I want to play. So, you know, Phil, hint, hint. I'm not Phil, but Dan Reb. Hint, hint, in case you're listening. Yeah. Let's see. Glacier looks pretty neat. Tiny Bookshop also looks cool. It's kind of up my alley. Good, quiet, comfy game. Opus Prism Peak definitely looks really awesome. And I'm definitely going to take a look at that. And UFO 50, too, being able to just play that on a console it just sounds great. So yeah, there's a bunch. They had a bunch of really great announcements here.
Yeah. How about you, Dinner?
I enjoyed this one a little bit more than the Partner Direct, just because, like, you know, a lot of the indies just speak to me. Of course, I'm going to go ahead and echo what Brandon said about Mina the Hollower. This is something that I've been hyping for the last few years now. I've befriended a bunch of people at Yacht Club Games. So, like, if I can't get a code the official way, I'm going to just, you know, use the friend card and see how that goes. Neverway is a game that impresses me every time I see it. I'm not big on horror games at all, but this one looks like it just goes the extra mile to really make you feel something on top of just the way its visual style is. It looks really, really nice. And
Yeah, it's got the gorgeous pixel art.
Like the way it uses the purples and the grays and the dark colors, it just works. So that's something I'm really excited for. Hurdling is a game I played at GDC. If we get a code, I'm definitely going to throw it Chris's way. But it's a game that I really, really enjoyed, but it also had a bit of a learning curve. Like when you see the kid, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, moving the beasts in front of him, that actually took some getting used to, because it's really hard to, like, really move them around. Main reason being, like, when you're playing the game, think of like a pool cue, right? You have to, you know, hit the back of it to, you know, like, hit it somewhere else. You have to have that same mentality, otherwise, like, you'll just struggle moving things around. But yeah, that one definitely looks like a whole lot of fun. I am a huge fan of the games that Panic publishes, and that one looks great as well. Little Kitty Big City, I don't know what this is, but I really enjoyed that game. If it's story DLC, I'll jump in, but it looks like it's more like customization stuff, so I don't know if I really care. And then Ball Pit also looks really cool. I did not watch any of the stuff during SGF because I didn't have any time, so I didn't know what this exactly was. But now that I've seen it in action, and it looks like something I'd want to try. Tiny Bookshop is something that probably should have had more to it, just because it was a shadow drop. But yeah, looking forward to looking at that as well. Opus Prison Peak also looks amazing. I don't know how it'll play on Switch 1. I hope there is a Switch 2 update, but that one looks cool. And then UFO 50 was a game that I didn't pay much attention to last year, so I'm happy that's not on Switch, so I can give that a shot, and it's available now. So that one looks pretty cool. But yeah, if anything, I wish this had one more thing in here, even if it was Mina the Hollower to talk about the demo. But yeah, at the same time, like, Nintendo is the company that decided to make this format, so I guess I can't really complain about that. And Is This Seat Taken? Like, that's available on Switch and PC. If you're somebody who only has like 5 minutes to play a game, this is definitely something you want to take a look at as well. But yeah, that's about it for me.
That was a decent enough showcase, but still not the one that people want to know, like, what else is happening for the Switch 2 later this year. Like, what this and the Partner Direct kind of showed is that the dev kit situation is still kind of bleak at this point. Not many companies have them, and so you're kind of stuck with a lot of these being just on the Switch in ways that's like, some of them will take advantage of the extra power of the Switch too, but you really would like to see updates for these games and upgrades to better take advantage of that. But yeah, they're still kind of dealing with a lot of that, and indies seem to be at the brunt of lacking on that, which is a shame. Considering, I feel like the Switch 2 has a lot of expensive and big games on it now, but it's the small stuff that is kind of the place where it's lacking. I was just looking at Apex Legend was in the last the Partner Direct. And that game is like 78 gigs. It's like a third, effectively a third of your hard drive space. Maybe even more of that. So they're at that point where you can fill up your hard drive with probably like 3 games. If you like your big budget, big sized games. So yeah, that's kind of the unfortunate thing with the way the Switch 2 library is right now. So yeah. As your Nintendo showcase for now. We'll see if we get any sort of Nintendo Direct in the next month or two, so we can get dates on Metroid Prime 4 that's still supposed to be out this year. And like I think they got one or two other games they may have out by the end of the year, besides Pokemon. But yeah, that's going to end up doing it for the show this week. So thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. As the summer trudges on, Madden will be out this week. I'm trying to see what else we got coming out. Yeah, there's Ra Ra Boom and Senua Saga Hellblade 2 for the PS5, as well as that remaster of the first game for PS5 on the 12th. The 14th has Dragon Drive. I played a little bit of that demo, and it's like, I don't have the desk space for it, so I was just using the like shorts here, the Joy-Cons on my shorts, and I felt like I had perpetually greasy hands I was trying to wipe off. I could not really get great hold on the controls a ton there. But yeah, it seems all right otherwise. Let's see, Madden's out this week. Midnight Murder Club is out in 1.0 for PS5 and PC. Bendy Lone Wolf and Off for the Switch and PC. That's the Undertale style game that's coming out. After being sort of out in freeware mode for a good 15 years or so. So, some interesting stuff coming out this week. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also interested in a variety of games that are coming out. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.